Yeah, John, you indicated it's great. First of all, great to be with you guys. I literally was asked today by Division I D1 Ticker, which is a college athletics news service, what my favorite podcast was. And I said, there's only one podcast I'll listen to, and it's Birds Fans Forever. So that will probably be in some kind of national publication coming up. So just wanted to make sure that all Bird fans are watching Bird Fans Forever and listening. John, so that's my official endorsement. You'll see that in publication soon. But, you know, it's great to be with you guys. I love this podcast. I've really enjoyed listening to every one you guys have put together.
Hello, fellow Redbirds. Welcome to Bird Fans Forever, podcast number 53. We never thought we'd get here. Number 53 is a number John wore in school, so this is a really big episode for us. Please follow us on our @BirdFansForever Twitter account to be notified of our latest podcast videos. Also, go to our website, www.birdfansforever.com, where you can find a list of our previous podcasts. Finally, go visit Bird Fans Forever on YouTube and slam dunk that subscribe button. Our YouTube site has our Redbird game archive, where you can go find a classic Redbird game to watch. We've been getting a lot of videotapes from friends of the podcast that John has been transcribing to our digital library. Before we get today's guest, we wanted to give kudos to our Redbird Esports, who won 3 MVC titles in the inaugural Valley Esports Tournament, or Esports Championship. Way to go, guys. Our guest for today coached the Illinois State Redbirds from 1989 to 1993. In that time, the team had won 2 regular season titles and a conference tournament championship, leading to an appearance in the 1990 NCAA tournament. He also coached the Washington Huskies to the NIT twice, the NCAA twice, including a Sweet 16 appearance. As a player, he is the first to have played in the NCAA tournament championship for 2 different teams, Indiana and Duke. Please welcome to the podcast, Redbird coach Bob Bender.
Woo! Chad Gallagher's blood's still on that jersey, by the way.
Hello and welcome. This is Bird Fans Forever, episode 53, with my coach, Coach Bob Bender. Coach, happy to have you on. This is awesome.
This is great. I appreciate you reaching out and in the invitation, and I look forward to reminiscing, but also talking a lot about what all of us feel, and that is Redbirds Forever.
Awesome. We've had 4 of your staff members on already, so we will be fact checking you against your staff to see how well you do. And so we're going to start with the question we always start with, because it's Bird Fans Forever. How'd you get to ISU?
Well, that's a very easy question to answer, because I think everybody knows I grew up right there in Bloomington. My career took me from Indiana to Duke, and fortunately that I was able to join Mike Krzyzewski's staff in 1983. And Mike always had a philosophy that after 4 years on the staff, that you would be ready to start trying to look for your own head coaching job, which was an incredible thing for him to put all of us in that position, where he felt like we were, he always gave us so much responsibility and so much, input into the program while we were assistants, that we could run our own program. So after my 4th year, I started to apply for jobs, and my first job I ever applied for was Radford University now, in Radford, Virginia, which I thought was a great first job, an opportunity to become a head coach, certainly a play on words, but I applied, got a resume. I got Mike Krzyzewski and Duke University behind me, and I got a Dear John letter. Thank you very much for your interest. However, we are going in a different direction. So, I was kind of humbled and said, wow, maybe I won't ever get a job. And then in my 5th year, I applied for a couple of other ones. SMU was the one that I really thought I might have a shot at. And I went down to interview. They were interviewing people in Atlanta, so I flew down to Atlanta, and I got, you know, to Atlanta, and they were doing it at the Marriott at the airport, and I, you know, went in for my interview and came out and found about five other guys waiting in line, and I said, well, this doesn't look good either, you know. So that's my fourth and fifth year. Well, my sixth year, you know, I was, you know, content with being at Duke, and I, you know, I would have been more than happy to stay at Duke for as long as it took, but I did want to be a head coach. And then all of a sudden, you know, to me, the greatest first job you could ever get opened up, and that was ISU. And an opportunity to go home with a school that I was, you know, completely, you know, confident in, knowledgeable about, and an opportunity to be in the Missouri Valley Conference. And that was a big thing because, you know, in those days, the Valley was, you know, it's, you know, what Gonzaga's conference is now. We were that, you know, the Valley. You know, unfortunately, you know, back in those days, you know, you only got one representative into the NCAA tournament. But the history, the tradition of the Valley, I knew was, you know, something that you can't pass up. So, you know, when I saw that the job had opened, we were in the NCAA tournament, we were going to be playing in Greensboro in the first round. In 89, and I told Coach Kay, I said, you know, Illinois State just opened, and I'd really love to have the opportunity to have, you know, be involved with it and see where it would go. And he immediately, you know, called Ron Wellman, and Ron was very open. He already had my name in, you know, in his mind. And he flew out to our first round game to Greensboro, and he got his ticket through us, through Duke, and he was sitting. What was great was that he sat next to Pete Gaudette's wife, who was just a dear friend, Pete and Maureen, and he sat with her during the whole game, and Maureen is one of the greatest recruiters in the world and one of the greatest agents in the world, as I look back now. And she and he talked the entire time. And so, you know, we won the game. Now we're getting ready to play the second round of the NCAA tournament. Ron went back, you know, back to normal, and he, you know, I'm assuming that he, you know, started doing his homework with the other people that they would be considering. But we went on and, you know, went through that second round and then, or second game, and then into the, you know, round 16 and on to the Final Four. And Ron reached out at that point and said, you know, we want to bring you to campus to interview. And I said, sure, absolutely. It's the only job I want. I'm not applying for any other jobs. I tried to put a little pressure on him. And he said, okay. He says, so, you know, after the tournament was over, instead of, we got beat in the semifinals that year in Seattle, and I flew back to Durham with the team. And the very next morning, I flew out through Chicago, you know, back in those days, we didn't have that many flights back into Bloomington Normal.
Yep.
his assistant, and I have to, you guys forgive me for, you know, 67 years old now that I can't remember. He wound up becoming the AD at
Larry Lyons.
No, Larry wasn't. Larry was the he was the business manager that.
Yes, he was. Days. Yep.
And but the assistant, great guy. He picked me up at O'Hare, drove me down to Bloomington, and so the first night I got to town, he's taken me, you know, to dinner, and, you know, he's saying, well, we're going to go to this place. And I had to remind him, I said, you know, I did grow up here. I don't know, okay? You know, like, we're going to Jim's Steakhouse. It was there when I was in high school. So. It's been a while. But so we had a great night that night. And then the next day I met with Ron for the first time. And, you know, I had talked with Ron after the game in Greensboro, but, you know, to no great extent. And so we sat down for the first time on, you know, on Saturday. And it was just, you know, to me, it was a match made in heaven. He was exactly like I am, you know, Midwest guy. He's from Ohio. We just hit it off right away. And so I spent the rest of my, you know, time and, you know, on the interview with other people on campus. I met with the president, and I met with other people in the athletic department, everybody on the search committee that they had at the time. And you know, I left, and I felt,
wait. Do you remember, you actually, Ron Wellman had us interview you?
Yes, you did. Yes, he did. Well, you know, and I was like, and I appreciated that, because that gave
Despite
me a better
that, he's still
what I was getting into. I wanted the job bad. But, you know, after visiting with you guys, I wanted it even worse. But if I hadn't felt that way, I wouldn't have pursued it like I did, because that was a great thing. I mean, that's something that I don't think a lot of people, back in those days, I think they do that now.
Yeah.
I think it's just a natural part of the interview process, is meeting with the player. Although you don't know who you're going to be meeting with, you know. But it was great. I thought that was, you know, brilliant. And I listened to you guys, and you know, you had been through a lot, you know, especially the seniors. And seniors to come, and I liked all of you. I know it's hard to believe, but I did. you know, it was a very unique group. I mean, I could, you know, you got Sonny from Rockford, you got you from Bloomingdale, you got, you know, Randy from Peoria, you know. Gerard from West Chicago, which I always thought was probably
North Chicago.
North Chicago?
Yeah, North Chicago.
He's North Chicago?
Yeah, he's actually a gym teacher and head of the PE department at North Chicago High School. So yeah.
Well, good.
Shout out to Big JC.
I always thought that was in the lake. I was like, North Chicago is in the lake. Anyway, so yes, we did meet, and I left, you know, went home to Durham, and you know, they didn't offer me the job when I was there. So I went home to Durham, and I was in California recruiting. And Ron, actually Coach K called me first, and he said, Bobby says, I think they're gonna call you and they're gonna offer you the job. You know, do you want it? And I, sure, yeah, I do. And so Ron called and offered me the job, and I said, absolutely, I want it. I said, but I got to tell you, I'm in, he says, we want to have the press conference tomorrow. I says, well, I'm in California right now recruiting. And I said, I guess I can, you know, you can fly me back, you know, there now. But I says, I don't have anything, like, you know, I don't have a coat and tie, I don't have a suit or anything with me. And he says, no problem. I said, so I called my parents, who had since all relocated, my parents, my family, to Chicago area. And so I called my mom and dad, told them that I got the job, and that was great. Everybody was excited. And I said, now you got to pick me up at O'Hare. And I says, we got to go to Oak Brook, and I got to get a coat and tie. You know, I don't have anything with me. So we did. And then I got down to Bloomington, you know, for the press conference and, you know, at school. And that's how it all went.
So now, question, because Coach Lowen,
I would say it was a 50-50 about who recruited who. I wanted the job from the day it opened, And I think that, you know, they knew enough about my background and everything that, it, you know, they wanted, you know, that I would be the first candidate they wanted.
Be so,
is that what those other derelicts told you?
Coach Lowenthal says that you actually called him after, sometime after you'd called your parents.
Yes,
I did. And it was like 6:30 in the morning, and you had said you were recruiting, and he said that was complete BS, that you were somewhere else. But so obviously you were in California recruiting.
You can tell
Coach Lowenthal you were, because he's like, looking at a kid at 6:30 in the morning.
You got to remember, you know, Jay and I go back to high school together.
I know.
You know, him in Pontiac and me in Bloomington. And we were being recruited, you know, as seniors. And he and I actually went to the University of Kansas basketball camp together as recruited guys. And then, of course, he went to Vanderbilt. I went to Indiana and wound up at Duke. And he stayed at Vandy. And so I did call him right away because he reached out to me to say, you know, I understand you're involved with the Illinois State job. I'd love to talk to you. And he was the head coach at Quincy College.
Yes, he was. Yep.
And I said, what do you want to talk to me about? You're a head coach. And he says, well, I want to come as an assistant. I was like, that's great. when you pick a staff, you want people that you know, you want people you trust, and you want people that, you know, you want to work with. And it was as simple as that. And when he told me that, I was like, oh, this is even better, because I don't have to go in, you know, as a new head coach and have 1,400 phone calls to return about people who want to join your staff who I don't know. And, you know, with Jay, it was easy. And I already knew that Billy King was going to come with me.
And starting at power forward, Mike Vandegaard.
Come back, and there'd be, you know, 1,800 messages I had to return, you know, guys calling. And I was like, Margie, I really kind of know who I've got coming already.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, Jay and Billy. And beyond that, then, I'll tell you a couple of stories about the rest of the staff.
I'll finish
with Billy. He and I talked about this even his senior year about, obviously Billy was a great player. He was defensive player of the year in college basketball. He had aspirations of playing the NBA. But we talked about, you know, honestly and openly about the fact if he didn't make it, what would he want to do? And I said, I would love to have you, you know, if I become a head coach, I would love to have you as an assistant. And he said, well, I definitely am interested. And I said, okay, great. And I let it at that, because after he graduated and he didn't make it in the NBA, he did go into broadcasting. He was doing really well, doing great. You know, he was, I can't remember, I don't know if he had one conference that he was doing. He did a lot of, you know.
Ohio Valley, I think, if I remember correctly.
He did a lot of Ohio Valley, and he even did a little bit of Missouri Valley, but Ohio Valley was his kind of specialty, you know, where he got his, you know, most consistent gigs. And then, I got the job, and I, you know, called Billy and said, Billy, you know, I got the Illinois State job. I, you know, really want you to come with me. And he said, yes. And so I said, well, and he was in Durham, you know, at the time. And, of course, I was in Durham. And I had come back to try and sell my, you know, townhouse in Durham and get stuff ready to be moved. And Alice and I got engaged when I went back to Durham. And I told Billy, I says, well, you know, I've got to be back on Monday. And I says, so, you know, if you're going to come, I want you to come back with me then. He says, yeah, that's fine. So he was living with Quinn Snyder and Danny Ferry at the time. And I go to pick Billy up on Monday morning, and I told him, so I'll pick you up at 7 o'clock in the morning, our flight's at such and such, you know. And I'm outside, their apartment, and they're not, you know, like, there's no one outside the apartment. So I go up, knock on the door. And I think Danny came to the door, Ferry. And Danny says, yeah, he says, he's getting ready, but I'm telling you, he made a mess of our place. We took him out last night for the last night, and he just made a mess of our apartment. I said, what do you mean? What do you mean he made a mess? He goes, well, he threw up all over the place. So he gets on, you know, he comes out, we get, you know, get to the airport, we take, you know, get on the flight. And he is so, you know, in bad shape. The whole flight, and we get to Bloomington, finally we get, you know, Bloomington normal, and he's, you know, feeling a little bit better at that point. And I think I first, you know, introduced him to all my buddies, you know, he had not met yet, you know, like Horace Cuerco and all my buddies from high school, and they took him out that first night, right away again. So that was his first introduction to Bloomington Normal, and but that worked out great. Yeah, that was an easy one. Jay was an easy one because he was the one who wanted to come, and I wanted him to come, and never expected that a head coach would want to become an assistant, but he did, and so I got my first two. Now the rest of them, it was an interesting journey.
So let's do Coach Mo. Okay, Tom Hodgson.
You want to go?
Tom Hodgson was your head coach in high school.
Correct. My senior year, only my senior year.
Your senior year, yeah.
My dad coached me my first 3 years in high school.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, yeah.
And he quit coaching my senior year so that, you know, he said, I don't want to coach and have people recruiting you, you know, think that they could offer me a coaching job and I would bring you with me. And so he let it be my complete choice and decision. And Hottie was his assistant, and so Hottie took over. Yes.
So right. Hottie's not the coach. Now, Hottie reaches out to you with a speedy bullet and says, hey, Bob, I got a guy you should meet. Or is he saying, hey, I got a guy I owe a favor to. Don't hire him. Here he is, right? I mean, is it...
See, now, this is where, you know, I can't believe Bullitt didn't, you know, go far enough. I knew Bullitt from when I was in high school.
Really?
Because Bullitt was at Illinois Wesleyan.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that, and have you guys, everybody seen what Bullitt looks like?
Yeah.
I mean, we see him at the basketball games all the time. We go over and talk to him at least.
You know what he looks like.
Yeah.
You know what his nickname was at Illinois Wesleyan?
No, do not know.
Gazzara. Because he looks just like Ben Gazzara. Do you remember the actor Ben Gazzara? Roadhouse, all those great movies. Yeah. His nickname was Gazzara. And he is from, you know, outside of Lincoln. Yeah. And grew up on a farm. And one of my favorite things that Bullitt used to talk about was, he said, you know what we had for lunch, dinner, and partially at breakfast? Meat. That's what we had, meat. Okay, great. So I knew, you know, Bob, and, you know, but I hadn't crossed paths nor talked for years because I was gone, and you know, he was doing his thing and everything. And little did I know that he was still in Bloomington Normal. And then Hottie says, you know, you need to talk to, you know, Bob Morris. And I says, Gazzara? Yeah. He says, I've been coaching basketball. And I said, and he says, he's really connected and he's got, you know, great, you know, feel for the game. And And that's all I needed to hear from Hadi, you know, is that he respected him and really thought a lot of him. So I was like, okay, well. But unfortunately, you know, back in those days, we could only have two guys as full-time assistants. Then you had to have, you know, what was called a part-time assistant, or I think they called it part-times then, and he could have grad assistants. So I says, yeah, but I says, you know, he'd have to be a part-time assistant. And, you know, Bullitt was agreeable to that, and I was like, perfect, now I got a third guy. So there you go.
All right, Coach Giacoletti, right? Because you had just said, as we started this, you were rolling into about how many phone calls you were receiving. Yeah. So kind of talk about Margie Dillo and how many calls you were, and then roll into, what was your connection to Coach Jack?
None.
That's what I thought, yeah.
None, absolutely none.
So how does his resume catch your eye out of the hundreds of phone calls you're getting?
Because he had Ted Owens, who was the head coach at University of Kansas, who recruited me. He worked for Coach Owens, Coach Jack did, in, I think they were in Tulsa. And I can't remember, it was with like a CBA type team, you know, like GJ team now.
Yep.
And when Coach, you know, Owens called and he said, I'm calling about one of my assistants. I'm here, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. I hadn't talked to Coach Owens in years. And he says, Ray Giacoletti. And he says, he's from East Peoria. And he says, you just need to talk to him. And I said, okay. I said, I would like to talk to him. And just like with Bullitt, my two full times were
taken. Yep.
You know, I got Billy and I got Jay. And so Ray flew in all on, you know, came to campus all on his own. And we just clicked. It was so easy. I mean, he's just a salt of the earth kind of guy, East Peoria guy, you know, I mean, just went to Minot State. I said, you know, if anybody can go to Minot State, you got to be okay. And he was, and he hard working. Oh my God. I mean, that guy would, you know, and I got to digress for 1 second here. And I got to tell you that, and I don't know why Ray was the one that went with me, but we went to see you play John in the Prairie State Games over in Champaign before your year in the summer. And Ray and I walked into Assembly Hall. You guys were playing in Assembly Hall. And who did you play for? Like,
Suburban team.
Suburban team?
Yeah, so one of the suburban teams. I got to think about it.
Okay, well, we looked down on the court, and whatever team you were playing for, they must have had a small budget because you had the smallest goddamn uniform on I've ever seen in my life. I mean, it was like skin tight, right? And Ray, of course, you know, he didn't pull any punches. He goes, oh, shit, he's got to lose about 20 pounds.
But remember, I had broken my foot and had surgery. Yes.
I explained
all of it. You guys.
I explained that's the way he was, though.
But yeah, I needed to lose 20 pounds. There was no doubt.
But, you know, that's how Ray was. He was like, I'm not going to pull any punches here. He needs to lose about 20 pounds. He says, Ray, first of all, it's the summer. He just came off of surgery. I said, he haven't done anything. He'll be fine. He'll be fine. Okay. All right. I'm tired of this happy horse shit, as he used to say. Always was happy horse shit. I was like, I didn't know how horse shit could be happy, but you know. So anyway, yes. So that's how I got Ray, and he stayed with me all the way through to the University of Washington. You know, before he became a head coach himself. Just a dear, dear friend and just a great coach. And then, if you recall, I had Eric Hughes as a grad assistant. And Coach Hughes, he, you know, was one of the people that, you know, had called, and I didn't know Eric. You know, he's from Oakland, California, but he had Coach Wooden call from UCLA. Of course,
really,
Coach Wooden was retired, and you know, he used to work his basketball camp, and was a very close friend of Coach Wooden's, and he had, I don't know how many other people call for him. I mean, all these, you know, big name, famous coaches, you know, on the West Coast call. And finally I called Eric and I said, Eric, I said, don't have anybody else call me. I said, I'm sick of it. I said, can you come out? Can you get out here and you know, we can sit down and talk? I said, but don't have anybody else call. And I always remember that both Ray and Eric, you know, I'm back home, you know, I'm used to being in, you know, back in Illinois. I don't expect anybody to be real formal. I just want people to, you know, sit down and just talk about things. And they both showed up in coat and tie. These guys are really serious, you know. Anyway, and I really liked Eric, and I was like, you know what, you really want to coach, and you've gone about it the right way. I says, so I'd love to have you come as a grad assistant, and can you get in? Can you get into graduate school at Illinois State? Which he did, and he was also, you know, he went into, you know, he got into, I think, PE, right? I think it was PE.
Yeah.
And I said, this is great, because he can organize camp and get all the, you know, all the teams set up, and, you know, all the, you know, tournaments set up. And, you know, one of the things he did while he was in grad school and coaching with us is he umpired girls softball in the area. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 He had some great jobs. Yeah. So that's how the staff came to be.
Wow.
Which was great. I was the most fortunate guy in the world to have a first time out of the box as a head coach to have a staff like that. You know, it was just incredible.
So Coach, you're meeting the team after the interview for the first time, and you know, they played for Coach Donald Walt, who's a disciple of Bobby Knight, mm-hmm. and you played for Coach Knight, so you kind of knew what the style was. Tell us about that and how what you knew what they were going to, their style was, and what you were kind of expecting, what you wanted to do.
Right. Well, I you know, I believed in all the same things that Coach Donawald did, and he did a great job at Illinois State. You know, I mean, he had really elevated the program to a level that was NCAA tournament expectations every year. And so I'm not a real smart guy, but I figured out that this group of seniors that I'm inheriting, they went through a tough time, but they have talent. And so I said, you know, we're not going to go away from man-to-man defense. We're not going to go away from motion offense, but they need a little bit more freedom. Ricky Jackson was, you know, he was a natural scorer. He could get a basket, and we needed that. You know, every team needs that. Gerard, he had more skills than I think he had been expected to use or allowed to use. I thought John, same thing. I thought, you know, yeah, big body that, you know, can bang and, you know, get stuff done inside. But, you know, you can do a little bit more than that. You know, Richard was, you know, he was a little advanced for a freshman back in those days. And he needs a little bit more freedom as well. So, but you don't know that until you get involved in practice and you get involved in the season. And I knew that it wasn't going to be easy because, you know, it sounds good on paper and sounds good in a staff meeting, but it's going to take some, you know, work to do that. And, you know, we went through some tough times. I remember calling back to Coach K and going, I don't know if I really am a head coach here. And we've lost some games that I'm like, God Almighty, how do we lose this?
Western.
As the season went on and we started to figure things out, we gained confidence in each other, the players in me and the staff, and you know, our staff in them, and them in each other, most importantly. I think the most important credit goes to what they did as a team. And it led to some tough times, you know. I mean, and that's what every team I've ever been involved with, from playing myself, you've got to go through them. You know, we've talked about the fact that, you know, we had an incident in the locker room where, you know, Scott Fowler just got up and he just went right after Gerard, and you know, it needed to be said. Gerard, you know, as tight as volatile as it was at the time, what came out of it was nothing but positive, and everybody benefited from it. The most important thing is our team benefited from it. So to, you know, go from just meeting them on my, you know, initial, you know, visit to Illinois State and my interview to seeing this thing come together. And then, you know, I don't know if fate, whatever, plays into it, but the fact that we were going to get to host the Missouri Valley Conference tournament at home at Redbird Arena, and we were just on a roll coming down that last, you know, month of the season. You know, we're winning, we're just, you know, we got it going. And yet, you know, what's in front of us is we got to, you know, somehow we got to beat Creighton, who, you know, Hartstatt and Gallagher, they were the
measuring stick
of the Valley at the time, and rightfully so. I mean, great players, great team. And then, you know, Southern Illinois was right there next to them, and we were gradually getting ourselves up into that conversation. So we, you know, we finished the season, you know, on a roll, on a upbeat, and, you know, coaches all to the day, they talk about playing your best basketball in March. And so we go to into the tournament, and we've got, you know, the tournament at home. I can't remember who we beat the first game.
Drake.
Right. We beat Drake.
We did not come out well against Drake. We were down 10 early, and I remember that timeout. You had some choice words for us.
Yeah, well, you know, they probably, and they were not even G-rated for what I was feeling. You know, I couldn't channel Coach Knight quite that well. So if I would have, I could have. But we, you know, got through that, and now we got to play Creighton, you know, in the semifinals. And had we beaten them? I don't remember.
We beat them at home because we're actually in third place because at the time it was based on points. We had won. We had beat Southern at home and beat Creighton at home, and we had lost that Creighton at Southern.
Sure.
Southern did the same thing. Everybody had won their home games and lost their road games.
Road games. Okay. So anyway, we, you know, it was like, you know, Tony Barone was, and Tony Barone, you know, I have to tell you, I don't know if you guys know this, but he's a Duke graduate as well, played basketball at Duke. You look at him now, you don't think so. He was only the inspiration for Fred Flintstone, but, you know, he was actually a good basketball player at Duke. And so we, you know, it's a hell of a game. I mean, just, you know, just what you'd expect. And we beat them. And now we're going to play Southern in the championship game. And the game was sold out at Redbird Arena. Unbelievable atmosphere. And so we, you know, it goes right down to the end where it's back and forth. You know, no one can get a real run going. Nobody can get any kind of momentum to, you know, create a little bit of distance. And so now we're going down, you know, in the last minute, and it is a 1-point game, you know. And Ricky comes through, hits a big shot.
It does.
They go down, you know, at the other end with a chance to win it as well. And what, did they get two shots off, I think, John? No,
they did get two shots off. They needed the three to tie. We were up three.
Right. Yeah.
So but they needed the three to
they
tie.
Missed it. They got the we got the ball, and they took it back.
Randy blocks Freddie. Remember, Randy actually blocks Freddie. The ball comes back to Freddie. Yeah. Freddie then gets the shot up, but it's not enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, it was – you couldn't – as a first-year head coach, you couldn't have asked for a greater season, but also the, you know, culminating game as a first-year head coach. I mean, and for the seniors – especially, you know, going from having a losing record the year before, and, you know, having a coaching change going into their senior year. You know, and let's be honest, back in those days, a lot of times coaches came in and the first thing they did was, and I always used to remind myself, don't ever say this in an interview if you're interviewing for a job, is to say, you know, we need to change the culture. Like, do you think the other guy that was here, you know, wanted to lose? You know, no. Right. The culture was they wanted to win, but they didn't. Yeah. Okay, but that's gone now. Like, let these guys, you know, like write their own destiny, and that's what that group did. They wrote their own destiny.
Talk about Sonny's drive. You talked about that earlier.
Oh well, I mean, and then what? Oh gosh. This is how old it is when you're 67, but he was from Michigan City, Indiana. Who was?
Xavier Williams.
Xavier. Xavier had about the same type of move. He made about four fakes from the elbow. Shot fake, you know, like a retreat dribble, and he makes a shot. And it's the only 2 points he scored, but they were huge 2 points, right?
Yeah.
You know, when you look at it. So we had these contributions from everybody, but you know the one by Sonny is just I've coached a lot of times, a lot of games, a lot of players. I've never seen anybody do that in my life of dribbling within a four foot box and eventually scoring the basketball. But you know. That's the way it was. That's what you needed. And that's what was needed in that game. And that was, I believe I'm correct, that was the last championship game decided on a neutral, you know, on a home court.
Right. Court, yeah.
Then went to St. Louis. Then we went to, and now alluding to the fact that the second year where we, you know, brought in a freshman class that wound up having to play well before they should have. Even though we had Richard back, we had Scott back, and Elvin and you know, a number of other guys, but it was going to be a rough year and, rougher than I thought it would be. I thought we would, you know, struggle out of the gate because we're going to play all these young guys along with these few veterans and, but it was a struggle all year.
Well, you lose Scott right before you head to Dayton, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That hurt.
And we lose, I think we lost, did we lose Reggie Miller or Reggie?
Reggie Wilson was the next year. He played 10 next games and then broke next, his leg. Yeah.
So, you know, that was the way what it used to be back then. You know, I had these seniors that, you know, had all this experience and it proved to be, you know, invaluable. They win a championship. They go to the NCAA tournament. The next year, we're playing with Richard as a sophomore and Scott as a junior, right?
Yep. Sam Skerich is a senior. And,
you know, Sam, you know, again, there's another guy in the championship game comes in. This was a great call by Hottie. You know, he's doing our radio then. Yep. Hottie was the radio guy with Dick Lucky. And Hottie, you know, I put Sam in the game, in the championship game. And, somebody, you know, gave him, you know, had a tape of it. And Hottie says, hey, that's Sam Skerich coming in. And he hits a three and he goes, that's what he put him in there for. So
all he said. That's all he said. That's what he put him in there for. So, you know, that second year was kind of to be expected. And that's where I go back to my relationship with Ron Wellman. He was great. And I you know, probably every other game when we would lose, I tell him, I apologize. You know, I'm so sorry. I said, this isn't acceptable here. This is not Illinois State. This isn't acceptable. And he's, hey, I understand. I know what we're going through. And that's why I always go, I tell people, I say, you know, the greatest thing that Ron Wellman brought as an athletic director to Illinois State was the fact that he's a former coach. You know, coach baseball at Northwestern. He's a coach. And that's the way he thought. He knew how things went. You know, it wasn't like a guy that was a fundraiser, you know, or a guy that went to Ohio University and got his degree for, you know, athletic management. You know, he was a real, real guy. So, anyway.
So let's talk the NCAA tournament while we've got a minute here. So I don't know if you remember this, but we were going, you had gotten a rental car, and we had to go over to Media Day. The team was doing a shoot-around at a high school gym.
Yeah.
And we were driving in the car, and you said to me, he goes, nobody's going to talk to us because this is the defending national champions.
Yeah.
And our answer is going to be, we're Illinois State. We don't do anything different than what we do. Because you were going to get a lot of questions about what are you going to do different?
Yeah. Yeah. That's all I read and all I heard. And you guys as well heard that. You know, what are you going to do to play against Michigan? You know, different. Well, it's only a week. I don't think we're going to put a new offense in. We're not going to go box and one on Sean Higgins, you know. We're going to just play our game, and, you know, hopefully we'll play well doing it and compete. And but I did, I think I did tell the team, John, that we're not going to like slow the game down. We're going to play, just play. We're not going to, you know, come up with this elaborate game plan that, you know, to, I don't know, you know, make it more competitive. We're going to play, and you guys did. You know, that's the way it went. So,
yeah, you kept saying to us, we're playing the Illinois State way.
The Illinois State way, and it was. It was good enough that we were in a position to win the game. Believe in the players, believe in what we've worked on all day, all season, and then let's go tip it up and see what happens. But what was funny was, I don't know if you guys recall, but Quinn Buckner was doing the game. He was doing college basketball at the time. And, of course, Quinn and I were teammates at IU, and you know, and Quinn even asked me before the game. He says, "What are you going to do? You know, you're playing Michigan. What are you going to play? What adjustments are you going to make?" Quinn, we're not making any adjustments. We're going to play, and, you know, see what happens. After the game, he says, "Actually," he says, "that was a pretty good coaching move." I was like, "Gee, thanks, Quinn." You know. I said, didn't go so well for you when you were the head coach at the Dallas Mavericks, and you know, you, for 6 months, you know. So, but anyway, yeah, that was great. It was, you know, and they sent us all the way to Long Beach. I don't know if you remember this, John, but one of the guys that came up after the game and really, you know, made a point of, he came to the locker room afterwards, was Tony Gwynn.
Yeah.
The baseball player, and just to tell us how, you know, impressed he was with how we played and the way we played. You know, he was playing for the Padres at the time, and he had gone to San Diego State, and so that's why he was at the game. But yeah, it was great. I mean, what a wonderful ride that was. Wonderful.
Yeah. Why don't we stop here?
Yeah.
All right, Coach, we got to talk about the first rule. The rule we used to have was we were not allowed in bars. And then one of the first team meetings, you come in and have your own rule. And I can honestly say Gerard and Sonny and I and Randy and Ricky were looking at each other like they had brought a unicorn in or we had seen aliens, right? And so tell, what was your rule?
The rule was that if I was at one of your bars on campus and you one of you guys came in, that I would leave. But if you came into a bar that was one of my bars that I was, you know.
Name a couple.
I'm from there, you know, the Luca Grill, okay, you know, the Luca Grill downtown.
Elroy's with Butch.
Killarney's,
yeah.
Killarney's, you know, those were, you know, those were there when I was a kid growing up, okay? Those were my bars. Then you guys had to leave. It was a pretty simple rule, you know, I mean, it was a rule made out of respect. You guys were all 21, 20, maybe 22.
We were 22, all of us.
Yeah. Knows how old Ricky was, right? And so it was an easy rule to put in place. I tell you, though, you know, after you were gone and before my last year at Illinois State, we went, we took our team on a European trip. And this is with, Todd Waymaner and Mike Vandergaard and all the boys. And
Butter.
And, well, Butter was, he's a mainstay. I mean, there was Ron Wellman, and then there was Butter. Butter is, the man, he's the commissioner of the Mountain West Conference now.
Big West, yep, yep.
Yeah, I mean, come on, it's Butter. He's the best. You know, we called him Radar, from MASH. You know, I'd say, hey, Butter, I need to get and he'd go, here you go, coach. I didn't even say what it was, but he'd have it done. You know, I need a practice plan. Here it is. Oh, Butter, what a beauty. But which is a classic story from this trip. So we're playing, and we're in Belgium, and Belgian basketball is not the best, and so we're just killing people. Well, one of Butter's responsibilities was he would call back to Pantograph the scores and kind of give them a little bit of a, synopsis of the game. Well, Butter tells me, Coach, he says, I've had this dream for years that we would be in a game and we'd be winning so big that you'd put me into the game as a player. I'm like, that's a pretty good dream there, Butter, but, I don't think that's ever going to happen. So we're over in Belgium, it's a great trip. We're playing, really well. We got a great group of kids, and so we're winning a game, huge. And so, I got Cagle and Waymaner and Vandergaard, the three biggest ringleaders of mischief in the world. And they're all on me like, hey. And Butter had already told all of them his dream, which, of course, they gave him shit about for years. And so I was like, Butter, come here. I says, see if somebody's got the same size sneakers as you. And if you got an extra, he's the manager. He says, got an extra set of, uniform. And he goes, yeah. He goes down, and of course, all these guys are egging it on.
You know whose shoes he took?
Yeah, Kegel's.
No, Jack Letty's.
Whose?
Coach Jack was in his socks. He gave him the shoes. Yes. Your coaches were in on this too.
Oh, yeah, no, everybody was in on it. I was in on it. I mean, I loved it. I thought it was great. But, so, anyway, he disappears in the locker room, comes back out. He's in full gear now, right? And do you guys know Butter at all?
He's been on the episode 13.
You know Butter.
He's told the story, yep.
Yeah, so, anyway, so he comes out, and there's probably about, maybe 4 minutes left in the game. And I said, come on, Butter. And he comes up, and I said, now look. Number one, when you call back the score to Pantograph, you do not put your name in the box score. Okay? Number two, you do not shoot the basketball. If you catch it, You pass it. I said, so, you know, just go down to the other end and guard the guy you're supposed to guard. I said, that's all you got to do. Well, of course, Cagle and Wayne Hainer, they're not going to have a bit of that. They know what they want to do. So very first time down the floor on offense, they set up a play where Butter comes off of, you know, like a staggered baseline screen. Here he comes. And sure enough, he turns around at three-point line and just launches one. And so all I can think of is, if this goes in, I know that the Pantograph headlines tomorrow are going to be Dan Butterly hits game-winning shot against, you know, Antwerp Nationals, you know, in Antwerp, Belgium. And he missed it. So I'm thinking, okay, we you know, dodged a bullet here. Well, every play they ran for the last, you know, eight possessions were all to get Butter a shot and hopefully to score. And it was one of the best, I mean, just one of the great stories of what those foreign trips. I wish I could have had a foreign trip happen before your senior year. That would have been, we probably would have been a lot better at the beginning of the year than we would have been having to grow together.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was never going to happen. So that was, you know, part of what being at Illinois State was really one of my greatest memories of coaching basketball. It was just, you know, everybody there wanted to be there. Everybody there wanted to be a good college player. There was no hidden agendas. There was no any of it. It was just real. And that, you know, as you move on in your career, and, you know, I have great, you know, memories of University of Washington and all my time in the NBA. But Illinois State was about coaching basketball and about being with people that, you know, it meant something to be college basketball player.
Yep. All right, Coach. This is where we wrap it up. I know your son, Trey, is trying to become a lawyer. My oldest is a lawyer. We call this closing statements. Your closing statements.
Counselor. I would say that, you know, for somebody that grew up in Bloomington, had an opportunity to come back to be a part of the community as a head coach at Illinois State, you couldn't ask for anything better. You know, there's so many great memories of what that was about. My staff, I never had a staff like that, you know, ever again. I was never a part of a staff like that ever again. I had players that, to this day, I just, you know, I'm amazed at what they were able to accomplish and what they overcame, including yourself, you know. Somebody like Antoine Hicks, you know, Elvin Flores, just, you know, that was, you know, what made coaching, you take a pause to say, why am I doing this when you lose a game? But then you remember all these things and you go, that's why I did it. That's why I loved it. That's why I was so blessed to have had a chance to do it. So, and now I can enjoy myself because I don't worry about the wins and losses anymore. Just watch the game, you know. And I have to tell you, you know, anytime Illinois State's on, I watch. I watched them this year, and, you know, it'll always be a part of me.
Awesome. Well, Coach, thank you so much for being on. This is Bird Fans for episode 53. And so I've been saving this episode because that's my number. I know you've coached a lot of great number 53s. Not, but yeah. So
I don't know if you've ever had another 53.
I actually went through your Washington your Washington roster? You had no 53s in Washington.
Yeah. I don't remember ever another 53. Yeah.
So I could be your best 53 only.
Yeah, go ahead and say it. Yeah,
I am your best number 53.
All-time leading scorer at Illinois State from Bloomingdale.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I got that too.
Yeah. That's good.
All right, John, hit it.